Welcome back to The Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. In today's podcast, we will be discussing The Brothers Karamazov, Chapter 1, and then we'll be reading Chapter 2. Firstly, I've got to say thanks to you guys. Thank you, guys. Seriously, I just checked the pre-orders, the back end of the pre-orders system through Amazon's back end thingy. And I can see that a few of you, have gone and ordered Aaron's book. So, thank you, whoever that was. Someone out there listening. Thanks. I really do appreciate it. And Aaron really appreciates it too. Jeez. What just happened to my face? I don't know. I am going to... What I forgot to do yesterday was I was going to put the link to the page in the discussion forum. So I'll do that in today's one as well. If you want to go and read the blurb for Aaron's book, check out the cover art, all that. I am going to briefly talk about that book, plug that book every day until the launch. That's 10 more days, so get used to hearing it. Aaron Huggins' book, Live a Little. We're super excited to share it with you. All right, enough of that. There has been quite a lot of discussion about Chapter 1. There is 27 comments. That might be one of the biggest discussions we've had yet on the Hemingway List, which is awesome. The questions that I threw out to you guys were these. What are your first impressions of Dostoevsky's style? It seems that Alexei... Am I saying that right? Alexei is the main, or a main, character, and we're starting out by learning about his parents. What are your first impressions on his family? And did you have a favourite moment in Chapter 1? Not a particularly interesting set of questions, a little bit uninspired, but I did put a little note there. Have fun answering the prompts. Feel free to write whatever comments and thoughts you have. And if you can, please end your comment by asking a question of your own. And I've seen a little... I haven't really flicked through the comments yet, but... I am seeing a lot of discussion going on, so if you have gone ahead and done that, thank you very much for prompting the discussion forward. Techrific said, how the old paterfamilias is introduced plays on our prejudices even today. All I shall say now about this landowner, as we used to call him, even though he scarcely ever lived on his estate, is that he was an eccentric, a type not uncommon, however, not only worthless and depraved, but muddle-headed as well, yet one of those whose muddle-headedness never stops them from making an excellent job of their business affairs. I already hate the bloke. It's not surprising to me that we hear about his upcoming death. In the author's note, Dostoevsky tells us that his hero is the son Alyosha, or Alexei Fedorovich Karamazov, but he fears his reader won't understand his choice of hero. Well, too early to tell for me. His father seems like a right git to me. I was struck by that already we've had two Bible references, the first one trickier than the second. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone, but if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. John 12:24. Huh. Yeah, okay, that went over my head. I guess Bible verses are not my strong suit, Tech. But thanks for pointing that out. I was going to say I'd love to know what that verse means, what's the significance of it, but... God, once you start going down that rabbit hole, that's a whole thing. I think we'll just leave it at it was a Bible reference, unless someone elaborates on it in the comments. Now, what was I going to comment on here? Oh, the author's note. So the copy that I'm reading is the Hemingway List official copy. By the way, you can buy your own copy of the Hemingway List paperback version of The Brothers Karamazov at thehemingwaylist.com. Look for the link that says paperback. I think it says something like that, Our Paperbacks or something like that. You can buy yourself the official, the Hemingway List copy. It's the Which translation is it? It's the translation that's in the public domain, and the text is based from that version. So it's one of the older translations. Garnet, is it? I think. Actually, can't remember off the top of my head. But it doesn't include the author's note, so I didn't read you guys the author's note. Maybe we can track that down in the next few days and put it into one of the upcoming episodes. If it's important, we'll see what you guys reckon, if we should include it in the podcast. Techrific said, what do you guys think of think Dostoevsky is trying to convey with this one? A sacrifice? Maybe a man like Fyodor can produce offspring that are good? And Fyodor himself, the old gold digger, gleefully singing the Vesper, prey upon hearing of his wife's death. Lord, now let us know, now thy servant depart. Yeah, I'm not liking this fellow. We get it, D. He's a foul corn of wheat indeed. I like the translation. I'm reading it hassle-free. Direct prose. Can't wait to read on. I'm reading the Ignat Avsees translation. Let me see what translation I am reading. Because, okay, it's the Constance Garnet translation. It is the Garnet translation. Cool. Good to know. And I'm also finding that very direct, hassle-free prose Techrific. So I think that goes to show that Dostoevsky's style in the first place was clean prose, nice clean prose. I am Norwegian, said Dostoevsky had a son who shares the name of the main character of the Brothers Karamazov. Alyosha died when he was 3 years old. I wonder if that is what he is referencing with the Bible verse. There is also a woman not too much later in the novel who grieves a son that died at the same age. I'm just writing it here so I'll remember to look at her words as if they were Dostoevsky speaking about his loss. Very interesting. Now, what was I going to say? Oh man, I'm having a real brain blank kind of an evening. Oh yeah, about the father. You know, the thing I liked about that character is he seemed very real in a very short amount of space that we got to know him. And Tech, you were saying that he sounded awful, but I kind of felt for him, you know. His wife, well, they split. She went and did her own thing. I don't know what. Did he kick her out or did she leave him? I'm not sure. But he, the mixture of reactions, crying and celebrating, being sad and happy, showed, I don't know, that kind of duality that can exist in a good character. And I think Dostoevsky did a really good job of setting up that duality, because there's a funny thing that happens with writing where we want to be able to show that characters can be duplicitous or even have multitudes of personalities within one person. One person is a multiple beings, really, multiple personalities. It's just kind of the nature of humans. We do contradict ourselves and we do things that are illogical. We kid ourselves. We convince ourselves of all kinds of things, like you just the mere use of things like denial, cognitive dissonance, our ability to exaggerate and in our own memories as well, manipulate our own memories. People contradict themselves all the time. But the thing is, when you're writing a narrative, if you have a character contradict themselves, it's kind of jarring. It can be jarring, even though real people do that all the time. So it can be a hard thing to represent in fiction, because people go, aha, you said back there that he was this and now he's doing this, and that contradicts, you've made a mistake. And people seem to think that the author's made a mistake when the character contradicts themselves. But Dostoevsky did a really good job in this chapter of setting up that was what was going to happen. Where was that line about Yeah, here it is. He began by shouting with joy, raising his hands. But others say he wept without restraint, like a little child. So they're saying, some people said he was happy, some people said he was sad, but so much so that people were sorry for him, in spite of the repulsion he inspired. It is quite possible that both versions were true, that he rejoiced at his release, and at the same time wept for her who released him. That's a really cool line. Really impactful. And he's also offered the reader the knowledge that it is a contradiction, and that it's meant to represent the way humans really are. I thought that was really well done. "I am Norwegian," continues here, "and so it begins. Around 2 months ago, I mentioned that I wanted to read The Brothers Karamazov in a Reddit comment, and someone linked me to this subreddit." Huh, that's very cool. Thank you to whoever that someone was. "I have been slowly reading the book, ending at 11% before today. But as I have been curious about the difference between translations, as I think I'll have a better time being more familiar with the style and characters, I've decided to give another translation a go. I started with Constance Garnett. Now I'm reading Ignat Avsay's version. What are your first impressions of Dostoevsky's style? I have read Notes from Underground, which ended up being my favourite book. The strength of Dostoevsky is his ability to convey great depth simply. He is easy to read, for the most part, and yet he manages to convey things that you would never be able to articulate on your own. I learned a lot about myself reading Notes from the Underground. Something that also surprised me is how funny Dostoevsky can be. Reading The Brothers Karamazov, I found myself laughing a lot too. Did you have a favourite moment in Chapter 1? I really enjoyed the part about the young lady driven unconsciously by romantic notions to die a picturesque death. In a few sentences, it manages to give depth to Adelaida Ivanovna. I already find that I'm unable to articulate some of the things I want to express an appreciation for. There was a great psychological depth being offered, but it's hard to describe its insights concretely and accurately, at least for me. I'm looking forward to reading with people with more insight than me, offering their perspective on the chapters. Whilst most of my comments will not be this long, I look forward to challenging myself with these chapters and following comments. I think it will make me appreciate the book more in the end, and that it might imprint some of the value contained in the book deeper than if I just read it on my own. Definitely. You will definitely find that to be the case, Norwegian. We've come out of, this is the fourth book, so we've just done three, and then also the War and Peace book as well, the last year. And I've found in all of them that I've gotten so much more out of the books by doing it this way, reading it with this group. Each chapter is just kind of picked apart for you. And there's even been chapters where I've read them out loud into the microphone as a podcast. And at the end of the chapter, just gone, man, I didn't take any of that in. I can't even remember what that chapter was about. I feel like I was on autopilot. You know, occasionally if I'm tired or something. It doesn't happen very often. But it has happened. But then, you know, I put up the discussion forum, and then the next day read through the comments, and I find that it all makes sense. The whole chapter makes sense. And I do also find that I kind of was taking it in, but it can just be hard at the end of a chapter to recall what you've just read, sort of thing. But there's definitely times when the community has helped me to understand. Also, the other cool thing about this community is sometimes I'll get to a chapter, through a chapter, and just not know what the heck just happened and just be straight up, like, confused. And rather than having to flick back through and, like, figure it out, you can just add a comment and say, hey, what, I'm confused about this, what just happened? And people will jump in and answer it for you. It's really, really great. Techrific said, yes, I'm glad I'm not the only one reading the Ignat Avsay's version. Welcome to the subreddit and to the discussion. Glad to have you on board. A great neighbour, no less. I'm glad our two small countries are represented here, since we have a shared history and that we are so close to Russia geographically. Oh yeah, because Tech, you're from Sweden. Is that right? God, I hope I got that right. Very, very cool. The picturesque suicide was amusing, said Soma Stars, a precursor of the Instagram generation. That is quite funny. Plant Some Trees said, this seems more funny than Dubliners and Wuthering Heights. Good start. I hope it keeps going. It's kind of a wreck of a crazy father. The stepmother wasn't very pure also and is dead. We still don't know his mother and brothers. The sentence describing a young girl committing suicide like her idol and the side note he gave about the unfortunate, how unfortunate it was a cliff there and not a regular shore or something. I like the dark humour. It was a nice overture chapter introducing the crazy father. Let's see how are the other relatives. Gwynardle said, I loved the suicide note too. Dostoevsky seems to have more personality as an author than Bronte, and I really appreciate that. I'm just being casting my mind back to the first few chapters of Wuthering Heights that were really funny as well, and just crossing my fingers that Dostoevsky isn't just doing a few funny chapters to lead us into the book. I hope there is a little bit of dark humour dotted throughout the whole novel. Wasm said, first time reading any Dostoevsky with the Garnet translation. Looks like the book I have doesn't include an author note, though I am waiting on another edition. We'll see about that one. It reads to me that he packs a lot of character into just a few sentences, sprinkling humour throughout. As a general rule, people, even the wicked, are much more naive and simple-hearted than we suppose, and we ourselves are too. Is this the idea we'll be exploring later on, I wonder? Yeah, it could be. It could definitely be an idea that is unravelled further. Savvy Kid said, so I am reading the translation by Richard Peaver and Larissa Volkonsky. The translators provide an introduction that explains that they tried their best to keep Dostoevsky's humour within the novel. So far, that seems to be very true. They also state that Dostoevsky extensively researched each of the characters' dialects because each one apparently speaks a different way. The translators bring up the fact that Dostoevsky had journals devoted just to specific characters so he could practice the way they spoke, including the narrator. Starting the novel with this in mind makes it pretty clear as to why Hemingway would include this work on his list. So far, I love the style of Dostoevsky's narrator. They are hilarious. The introduction also stated that Alexei is the narrator's hero, favourite character in the story. However, that seems to imply that the narrator's bias may come through often, and it is up to the reader to decide for themselves about the worthiness of each character, including the narrator. But my impressions of the family so far is that they are going to be complicated, especially since Adelaida's life was described in the way that it was. So far, my favourite moment is when Adelaida's intentions are guessed by the narrator. They state, perhaps she wanted to assert her feminine independence to go against social conventions, against the despotism of her relatives and family, and her obliging imagination convinced her, if only briefly, that Fyodor Pavlovich, despite his dignity as a sponger, was still one of the boldest and most sarcastic spirits of that transitional epoch. I think it's hilarious that the narrator is so overtly sarcastic about this choice because everyone seems to know their marriage would be a failure and Adelaida could have done so much better. Adelaida. Overall, I'm really looking forward to reading this novel because of the information I gathered from the introduction and from what I have read of the narrator's style so far. A novel that makes me laugh is a rare find, and this one did it in the first chapter. I Am Norwegian said, you are going to laugh a lot more as you learn to know the characters. That's good to know. Soma Stars said, I'm part of the current Reddit group, Reading War and Peace. Some weeks back, I read an article on Tolstoy, which it noted his extreme ability to empathize, and how this was incorporated into his work. After reading the first chapter of Brothers Karamazov, I was reflecting on the differences between the two authors. It struck me how Tolstoy softens all his characters in one way or another. Even the hardest-edged character that I've read so far has a sweet side. With Dostoevsky, I get the impression that from the first chapter that this will not be his approach. He's so much snarkier and unforgiving of the people in his character descriptions. Kuma Ranashan said, "I'm kinda glad to find another person reading both the books together. The length, the intensity, and the fame of the books are making me wonder if I'm biting off more than I can chew. I also worry about mixing up the plots or characters, especially since the same cities could be providing the background to the events in each, I'm assuming here, and whether I'd be retaining anything less than the average reader, because it's not a book to be read while reading another book on the side. Well, these are my misgivings. Irrespective of this, I'm reading on. Let's see how it goes." I think you'll be able to keep them compartmentalized in your mind. The other thing is, if it does get difficult to keep up reading wise, the podcast, well, both the podcasts, the Year of War and Peace podcast as well, they're good for kind of cheat days, call them cheat days, where you don't get a chance to get the book out and read a chapter, or you don't get a chance to jump on the forum and join the conversation. But if you can get a chance to just listen along to the day's chapter, then you'll stay up to date, and then, you know, you stay on track with the rest of us. So the next time you do get the chance to grab the book and jump on the forum, you can do that. So that can be a good thing. I mean, if you don't already listen to the podcast, but yeah. Rockstar Bottom said, "Is anyone else saying the names of the characters aloud like an evil Russian henchman?" No, but I can say them like an evil Russian henchman for this chapter, if you'd like. Give that a little try. I'm struggling with the names. I suck with the Russian names. You'd think after reading War and Peace I'd be okay at it, but no, I'm just butchering them. I apologize for that. Just Once in My Life said, "Looking forward to discussions." Well, glad to have you here, Just Once in My Life. Gunnar said, "I can tell already that I'm going to need to take notes on this book. I keep worrying about missing something important in the giant blocks of text. I am not very impressed with either parent so far. They both seem overly dramatic, entitled, and selfish. I really loved the description of Adelaidea, a hot-tempered, bold, dark-browed, impatient woman. It really paints a picture. I'm reading the Constance Garnett translation on iBooks and have noticed that every page has this irritating page marker right in the middle of the text. It's going to drive me crazy. Can anyone point me to an EPUB version of the book that doesn't have this? Both free versions in the Apple bookstore have them." Well, I guess that's a good thing to know. Probably not a comment that I should have read on the podcast. It's not really part of the discussion, but that's all right. I suppose it's good to know that the iBooks ones, the free ones, tend to have annoying page markers in the middle of the page. Gornadal, if you would like, I can send you the PDF of the Hemingway List version, or you can grab it on Kindle. I don't know if you've got a Kindle on the Kindle store. It's a couple of dollars on there. You can do it that way. That'll put it on your device for you. And that is the same translation, Constance Garnett, but it doesn't have annoying page markers in the middle of the page. So that's quite good. Okay, who's next? So Dynamic. "I've read this before, but after reading War and Peace twice since my last The Brothers Karamazov reread, I am totally stricken by Dostoevsky's ability to summarize someone into one paragraph, the very first paragraph, and then to tell the story of Fyodor's relationship with his wife so concisely without leaving out any interesting details. I just love it." Regarding the second question, what was the second question I asked? Just one more time. It seems Alexei is the main character. What are your first impressions on the family? Yep, okay. So Dynamic said, "I can't answer this without giving spoilers." Well, that's good to know. "And as a general rule, people, even the wicked, are much more naive and simple-hearted than we suppose." I love this quote. I try to remind myself of this sentiment every time I deal with an awful colleague or acquaintance. Brian E. Denton said, I quite enjoy Dostoevsky's style here. Particularly, I like the narration technique he adopts, using a first-person narrator, whose participation in the story is so slight that the novel is presented mostly as a third-person subjective narration. This allows for a kind of comedic storytelling because, like Somerstars said below, the narrator, unlike in Tolstoy, is less forgiving and more likely to engage in a little snark and whatnot. It also grounds the story as we feel we are getting an objective report of the action from someone who was there and who knows the town and its people well. The family is awful and the rot starts with the father. My favourite moment in chapter one is definitely the concluding sentence. Personal observations. Dostoevsky's systems conservatism is readily apparent here. Already the narrator has expressed disapproval for the romantic generation, as opposed, I'm assuming, to more traditional lifestyles and dispositions. Anyway, I'm hyped for the discussions. Thanks for having me. Techrific said, in response to the bit about the father being where the rot starts, in my translation it is pointed out in a footnote that Fyodor is the Russian variant of Theodore, which means gift from God. The irony is not lost on us, and points to the theodicy problem that occupied Dostoevsky's so much, especially in this book. Sorry, that was terrible reading. Oh dear, okay, well, there we go. That is the conversation about chapter one. What a bombardment of discussion. Very, very cool. That was just one of those conversations where I think, being the first chapter, we're not all directing our thoughts in the same way, and it's just first impressions. Everyone's just giving their first impressions, so we're all a bit all over the shop. But wow, awesome! I mean, we've really successfully, sufficiently picked apart chapter one, so I reckon let's do the thing and move on and read chapter two. This is The Brothers Karamazov, chapter two. He gets rid of his eldest son. You can easily imagine what a father such a man could be and how he would bring up his children. His behavior as a father was exactly what might be expected. He completely abandoned the child of his marriage with Adeladia Ivanovna, not from malice, nor because of his matrimonial grievances, but simply because he forgot him. While he was wearying everyone with his tears and complaints and turning his house into a sink of debauchery, a faithful servant of the family, Grigory, took the three-year-old Mitya into his care. If he hadn't looked after him, there would have been no one to even change the baby's little shirt. It happened, moreover, that the child's relations on his mother's side forgot him too at first. His grandfather was no longer living. His widow, Mitch's grandmother, had moved to Moscow and was seriously ill, while his daughters were married, so that Mitya remained for almost a year in old Grigory's charge and lived with him in the servant's cottage. But if his father had remembered him, he could not indeed have been altogether unaware of his existence, he would have sent him back to the cottage, as the child would only have been in the way of his debaucheries. But a cousin of Mitch's mother, Pyotr Alexandrovich Miyosov, happened to return from Paris. He lived for many years afterwards abroad, but was at that time quite a young man and distinguished among the Miyosovs as a man of enlightened ideas and of European culture, who had been in the capitals and abroad. Towards the end of his life he became a liberal of the type common in the 40s and 50s. In the course of his career he had come into contact with many of the most liberal men of his epoch, both in Russia and abroad. He had known Proudhon and Bakunin personally, and in his declining years was very fond of describing the 3 days of the Paris Revolution of February 1848, hinting that he himself had almost taken part in the fighting of the barricades. This was one of the most grateful recollections of his youth. He had an independent property of about 1,000 souls to reckon in the old style. His splendid estate lay on the outskirts of our little town and bordered on the lands of our famous monastery, with which Pyotr Alexandrovich began an endless lawsuit, almost as soon as he came into the estate, concerning the rights of fishing in the river or wood-cutting in the forest. I don't know exactly which. He regarded it as his duty as a citizen and a man of culture to open an attack upon the clericals. Hearing all about Adelaida Ivanovna, whom he, of course, remembered, and in whom he had at one time been interested, and learning of the existence of Mitya, he intervened, in spite of all his youthful indignation and contempt for Fyodor Pavlovich. He made the latter's acquaintance for the first time, and told him directly that he wished to undertake the child's education. He used long afterwards to tell as a characteristic touch that when he began to speak of Mitya, Fyodor Pavlovich looked for some time as though he did not understand what child he was talking about, and even as though he was surprised to hear that he had a little son in the house. The story may have been exaggerated, yet it must have been something like the truth. Fyodor Pavlovich was all his life fond of acting, of suddenly playing an unexpected part, sometimes without any motive for doing so, and even to his own direct disadvantage, as, for instance, in the present case. This habit, however, is characteristic of a very great number of people, some of them very clever ones, not like Fyodor Pavlovich. Pyotr Alexandrovich carried the business through vigorously and was appointed, with Fyodor Pavlovich, joint guardian of the child, who had a small property, a house and land, left him by his mother. Mitya did, in fact, pass into this cousin's keeping, but as the latter had no family of his own, and after securing the revenues of his estates, was in haste to return at once to Paris, he left the boy in charge of one of his cousins, a lady living in Moscow. It came to pass that, settling permanently in Paris, he too forgot the child, especially when the revolution of February broke out, making an impression on his mind that he remembered all the rest of his life. The Moscow lady died, and Mitya passed into the care of one of her married daughters. I believe he changed his home a fourth time later on. I won't enlarge upon that now, as I shall have much to tell later of Fyodor Pavlovich's firstborn, and must confine myself now to the most essential facts about him, without which I could not begin my story. In the first place, this Mitya, or rather Dmitri Fyodorovich, was the only one of the Fyodor Pavlovich's 3 sons who grew up in the belief that he had property, and that he would be independent on coming of age. He spent an irregular boyhood and youth. He did not finish his studies at the gymnasium. He got into a military school, then went to the Caucasus, was promoted, fought a duel, and was degraded to the ranks, earned promotion again, led a wild life, and spent a good deal of money. He did not begin to receive any income from Fyodor Pavlovich until he came of age, and until then got into debt. He saw and knew his father, Fyodor Pavlovich, for the first time on coming of age, when he visited our neighbourhood on purpose to settle with him about his property. He seems not to have liked his father. He did not stay long with him, and made haste to get away, having only succeeded in obtaining a sum of money, and entering into an agreement for future payments from the estate, of the revenues and value of which he was unable, a fact worthy of note, upon this occasion to get a statement from his father. Fyodor Pavlovich remarked for the first time then, this too should be noted, that Mitya had a vague and exaggerated idea of his property. Fyodor Pavlovich was very well satisfied with this, as it fell in with his own designs. He gathered only that the young man was frivolous, unruly, of violent passions, impatient, and dissipated, and that if he could only obtain ready money, he would be satisfied, although only, of course, a short time. So Fyodor Pavlovich began to take advantage of this fact, sending him from time to time small doles, installments. In the end, when 4 years later Mitya, losing patience, came a second time to our little town to settle up once for all with his father, it turned out, to his amazement, that he had nothing, that it was difficult to get an account even, that he had received the whole value of his property in sums of money from Fyodor Pavlovich, and was perhaps even in debt to him, by that by various agreements into which he had, of his own desire, entered at various previous dates, he had no right to expect anything more, and so on, and so on. The young man was overwhelmed, suspected deceit and cheating, and was almost beside himself. And indeed, the circumstance led to the catastrophe, the account of which forms the subject of my first introductory story, or rather, the external side of it. Before I pass to that story, I must say a little of Fyodor Pavlovich's other two sons, and of their origin. Alright, there we go. Chapter 2 is complete. So, who is this Fyodor guy? Hey, Fyodor Pavlovich was the third son. Oh, so Alexei Fyodorovich Karamazov was the third son of Fyodor Pavlovich. Sorry, I'm just going back to the opening line of chapter 1. Alright, cool. Who is this bloke? What's he all about, eh? Have your say about this chapter over at reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist. reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist. I'll leave some discussion prompts there. I look forward to seeing your responses. Thank you very much for listening today, and I'll see you tomorrow. Hey, by the way, don't forget to check out Aaron's book, Live a Little, upandupmedia.com.au. Thanks. See you tomorrow.